It's Wednesday, July 23rd, 2014, and you're listening to episode 347 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 38 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
This is John.
All right, so since last episode, I think I figured out what was wrong with my internet. It's a long and boring story.
Too much porn.
It should be fixed.
Not enough porn.
I was going to say, Pat, are you sure you're going with that direction?
It's Dan. I meant for Dan. So it's not enough porn. That is the problem.
Actually,
if you don't keep your internet properly greased and lubed with the right amount of porn, it's not going to work.
Well,
that's a plain, simple fact.
All right.
You know?
You're erecting security measures.
Exactly.
It was the frequency of a splitter. So you can do anything profane you want to with that.
I don't need to. That says it all.
You're being too hard on Dan.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to try again with John.
There's two holes in the front and one in the back.
Yes.
Is that what a splitter is? Okay.
It's the fapping that goes on that's the problem. He had the wrong fap setting. That's what it is. Yes.
Point being, we're going to try again with John, and then actually John in person, possibly on the next episode, because we're going to try for some recordings this weekend.
Oh, not possibly, sir. It's booked.
Okay, it's booked then.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
John, first subject up is yours. Keeping the group small. Go for it.
Okay. I was putting together a group for a short campaign some months ago, and I had six people I knew wanted to play. I had sort of sussed them out and asked if they had any tabletop experience before. Four of them were an existing friend group that I had been a part of for a while, still am, but didn't really have any other connections to my other professional or social spheres. And two of them were other friends at work who knew each other and no one else but me. And I very deliberately and sneakily did not invite the two people at work because I wanted to maintain a sort of light social immediate cohesion to the group before we went into an RPG, because it was my belief that mixing friend groups in RPGs can create a sort of standoffishness that will make people, especially new people, nervous and skittish and unwilling to sort of drop their pants and speak in the funny goblin voice, or at least more unwilling than they would have been other. And I anticipated that would be somewhat of a controversial move because we sort of have a very inclusive ethos here in the gaming community and the Fear the Boot community and in all of our associated subcultures and sub-subcultures and so on and so forth. But I'm sort of here to stand by that decision and get assaulted for it on the forums and possibly by my fellow hosts. So, my fellow hosts, I ask you, have you ever attempted to run a game with multiple sectors of people that do not know one another outside of like a con setting, you know, actually going for it, at least an arc length campaign, if not an indefinite gaming group? And how did it go?
Let me definitely start by separating a home game from a con game, because in a con setting, the point of this is to reach out to other people, to intermingle with strangers. I mean, if all you want to do is hang out with your friends, you might as well save your money and stay home anyway.
No con game, period.
Right. And I understand a con game may have a limited number of seats and such, but we're certainly not going to deal with the issues of intermixing socially, because that's a presupposition of gaming in a public setting. Right.
I will say I have learned my lesson about con games and number of players, though, from this past year. You do have to kind of watch and think about how many people you have at the table. Because as much as you want to just say, I'll have 10 slots open, or I'll have room for 8 people, or, you know, no, I don't have another NPC, let's throw it together. Even if it's a great person, a great character, sometimes the table just gets too crowded for everyone to have a chance to shine in a con game where you don't know the people.
Oh, yeah. But that was not the case here. I am more than capable of running for 6 PCs, and I deliberately chose not to. So those are two good reasons to accept a little bit of chaos. And Wayne, you have a really good reason to limit the number of gaming seats. That is not what I did.
So, John, let me tackle your subject from two different angles. As you noted, within the geek subculture, we've spent a lot of time being excluded, being ostracized. And so amongst many people within our subculture, there is this view that anyone who ostracizes or excludes is a bad person. There's a list that's been floating around the internet of the 5 geek social fallacies. I think I posted it with a prior show, but I'll post it with this one as well because it's worth reading. But I believe fallacy number one is that to exclude anyone is wrong.
Yes, and I believe one of the corollaries was everyone must be friends with everyone else. And if there's any link in that circle that is broken or any one-way relationship, it's just a catastrophe.
Yes, friendship is transitive. If yes. I am friends with person A and friends with person B, clearly person A and B must also be friends when I bring them together.
It is so awkward being the guy at the party that is person C that only knows everyone because they all know B. And you just kind of show up and it's like, I don't know anybody here. And you come to that realization, I'm the guy from the other circle that's being included.
Yeah. You know,
well,
that-
I'll call you all to parties, no questions asked. And I've done it before. I've probably done it to each of you right now multiple times. But a gaming group is a different level of commitment.
I don't know that it is, at least for me, just because of where I come from socially and psychologically. But actually,
really?
Wayne, what you just described to me more than a party, that's a wedding. And this is why I don't do weddings except for close friends anymore, because if I don't really know and care about the person getting married and or feel I will know and care about a large number or at least a measurable number of the guests, I am not going to go there and be the one person where Carla knows the bride and I don't know anybody and the bride's the only person she knows and we're awkwardly lurking around the walls. But getting back on the topic of gaming. So let me break this two ways. The first is keeping the group small from the outset, saying I only want this many people and I only want them from a certain sphere of my life. I have done that and I have typically had no problem with that. In fact, I'd say it's probably been the reverse, that in many cases I have invited more people than I wanted, knowing one or two would shake themselves out over time, particularly in online games.
Oh, yeah, and I do it all the time. I think that should be standard operating procedure in online games.
Yeah, if you want four, go ahead and invite 25.
Yeah.
But if we cut it the other way, of once the gaming group is functioning, or should I say dysfunctioning, it's dysfunctioning because there are too many people and or one person is not fitting in. Maybe they're that guy. Maybe they're not that guy. Maybe they're just not fitting in. You know, there's nothing they're doing objectively wrong. It's just there's no social clicking there. This is where I turn into a much bigger wuss, and I shouldn't be, because quite frankly, I waste too much emotional bandwidth hand-wringing over the issue and too much of my free time in situations I don't enjoy. Because I'm too much of a wuss to just say, you know what, I love you, I'll happily go out for a beer with you or something, but this ain't working, you need to go. And I know that's not the kind of thing the vast majority of decent folk want to say. It's certainly not the kind of thing that the vast majority of thin-skinned and soft-hearted folk, like most geeks are, want to hear. And many will take it too seriously. But, John, I have to say that I respect what you're doing. I respect the fact that you're taking that stand to keep your free time, which is a finite resource, and saying I'm not going to let somebody else effectively steal that from me.
Yeah, I've never done it with a gaming group. And I think the only reason I haven't is because I've never put together a gaming group. Because I've done it with video games. I've done it with other social interactions. Sometimes you just know I have this group of friends, I have this group of friends, and I know how awkward it is to be commingled from there, and I don't want to spend the time getting everyone to know each other, because, again, that's another time investment.
Right.
Well, it would be great if all of my circle of friends are friends with each other. That's a lot of effort to put in, and to be honest, I don't even know that I want that. I like having different groups of people I do different things with. So if I were putting together groups for gaming, I think I would do this too, John. I've never done it because I've never put together a group, never had to put together a group. But yeah, I think I would do the same thing.
Well, let me ask another question, and I think I already know the answer, but I'm asking more for the sake of the discussion. Have you ever done the other thing? Have you ever removed somebody from a group?
I've been too big of a wuss to actually be the one to do it.
And that's what I'm really curious to hear from the listeners, is there might be some people that disagree in principle, that think everyone should be welcome. The group should be as big as it can be. If there's 25 people, just have multiple GMs, whatever. And I'm sure there are people that'll be of that opinion. And that's fine.
If the group gets over, let's say, 8 people, there's a guarantee that I want to never see one of them again. Maybe that's just me, but if a group is larger than eight people, at least one of them is rubbing me the wrong way.
Yeah, see, therein lies the bigger thing where I'm curious to hear listener feedback. Is one, I'm going to go ahead and just presuppose that anyone who's been gaming for any length of time has had to deal with somebody that maybe they liked in other regards but didn't want in the game. But my question for these listeners that I can't wait to see on the forums or posted on the blog thread is, have you been able to put together the cojones to actually remove those individuals? And if so, how did you do it and how did it turn out?
I've done that.
Okay, give me a story here. Change the names, obviously, but give me some stories here.
Revealing the context of the campaign will reveal the dramatis personae, since the campaign happened to become a kickstarted and published Pathfinder module. However, I had a player who played a certain green-skinned non-core RPG humanoid just turn out to be one of those guys that is great to have a beer with and chill with, but just turns into this turd when you get him in front of a player character sheet. And I never could figure out why, and I still can't figure out why.
Was he playing the bard?
No, he was playing a thief, I think.
Doom Whaler, I'll have you know.
No, it was not a bard. It was like flipping a switch when, as soon as I started to get into the okay, we're in character, things are going on, he just darted for the fences and did and said the stupidest crap he could think of in character and out of character and baffled everyone, you know, GM and mutual friends alike. And so ultimately, having run a moderate to high fatality game, as I so often do, I pretty much just let him kill himself. I put a basilisk in an orc fort, and the basilisk was contained, and the basilisk was not going to strike out and petrify any of the player characters unless they went and basically attempted to get it to do them to themselves. I would have taken 2-1 against that this particular player was in fact going to do that, and he did. He ran straight forward, he took the bag off its head, he killed its handler, it looked at him, he turned into a statue, and he was then not allowed to re-roll another character. I told him I would re-invite him when we were between arcs, and I never re-invited him.
So. Yes.
You know, sometimes you have those really convenient opportunities where you can... Oh, what was the phrase Brodor had? He had a phrase for this about not exactly uninviting someone. I can't remember what he called it, but he had some phrase.
Yeah, I don't remember what he called it, but yeah, there was no moment of friend dump. There was just moment of like, I don't even remember how I explained it, but it was something to the effect of, we're in the middle of things right now, and you died in such a stupid and willful manner that I'm not going to allow you to re-up a new character and get back into the thick of it. We'll call you off the bench when we're done. And we just happened to be never done, even when we were done.
You know, it's one of those things when I think about it, there are people that I won't talk politics with because the conversation will just go into a fight. There are people I won't play board games with because they're sore losers. There are people that I won't play video games with because they're too competitive. Why is it that when it comes to role-playing games, it's so much harder to say I don't want to play with that person?
It's more of a committed activity. I think it's really easy for me to turn around and tell people that I went to the Cardinals game with Steve instead of Chad because I have friends who love sports and I have friends who hate sports. But being pulled into a gaming group is this sort of rolling commitment. It usually becomes a regular social thing. Once you're an adult, the people that you choose to spend that finite free time with in a regular gaming group, you've typically made a vote in them to keep them a major part of your life, or at least a major part of your recreation, if you cut such things apart. And it's different. It's a different level of a rejection. People take it more personal, and it has more serious implications with regard to how much time and personality you're going to be spending on the people in your life.
Well, I wonder if it's also because people put so much more into their characters. If I'm playing a video game, the character on the screen is not me. It's not a part of me that's there. Yeah. I'm just controlling it. With a role-playing game, it seems like it's more a part of you that you're putting into your character.
I think
so. If you reject how someone plays the game, then it's...
I think it's far more what John... I mean, Wayne, I think what you're saying is true and has merit, but I think what John described is far closer to the truth, because if that was the case, you'd see that same kind of social upset every time somebody rerolled a character. You know, every time a character got killed, every time a campaign got switched, every time you sat down and said, hey, I want you in the group, but your character's not fitting in. Like, for example, let's go back to that infamous Dresden game where I was playing the Chinese Dragon. That character needed to go. The character wasn't fitting in. Having me create a new character would not have disturbed me. You know, it would not have shaken me one bit. And so I think, at least in my opinion, it's closer to what John is describing, that, yeah, you've made a commitment that, hey, we're buddies. We spend large amounts of time together in a socially and emotionally complicated pursuit. And you've been there for some amount of time. And now we're going to uninvite you. You are effectively no longer welcome as any character. You know, we've not uninvited the character. We've gone past the character and uninvited the player.
It's such an intimate thing, too, because with any other social interaction, like John mentioned, like going to the ball game or just hanging out with your friends, going out to dinner, going out to the bar or whatever. In that situation, you can be in a larger group of friends. And if there's that one guy that you or a couple of people don't get along with, but you still like him, he can still be there and he can interact with other people or whatever. And you can still interact with your other friends on. And it's okay. You know, it's like there's a little bit of uncomfort, but we like Egbert, so we're going to have him along anyway.
Yeah, you sit at the opposite end of the table.
Yeah,
you find somebody
else cool,
to talk to.
Because, you know, we're not assholes. We're going to have him along. And but it's in role-playing, it's not that way at all. I mean, in role-playing, like you said, the intimacy of it, you know, how connected you are. Everybody's sitting down at a table. Everybody's interacting. You can't do that. You can't just say, well,
and whatever
you know,
he does
he's
going to
sit over there and do
us.
His own shit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sit over here and it's going to be okay. It's like, it can't happen. And then that feeds into making it so difficult because then when you do get into the situation where we have a problem, he's our friend, but this is not working out. It's like, what do you do?
Well, and what's horrible is if you're not
to go away, it's like ending a friendship almost.
What's horrible too is if you're not the one with the problem, but you have two groups of friends and they're not meshing and they're not getting along and one batch of them will talk about the other batch of them when you're with each one.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of stuck in the middle. If you're a GM, a lot of that still falls onto your heads for which group are you going to be gaming with.
And see, that you just described, that's a normal thing in any friendship. Like in any circle of friends, you're going to have a certain amount of, we were doing this. And if somebody, you know, so-and-so, when they're not there at that time, you'll sort of talk about them. But it's not malicious.
Well, right.
Usually. I mean, it can be. But oftentimes they'll be like, a friend of ours, Don, he's got certain mannerisms. Like when he's not there, we'll sort of talk about him like, oh, God, can you believe what Don did that time? And this kind of thing. It's fun. And because we love Don, you know, we don't, it's nothing against him or anything, but it's, you know, that kind of happens. But it's just so multiplied. I think in the role playing situation is, I don't know. I don't quite understand why. I think maybe it's just the inherent social awkwardness of a lot of gamers and that gamer, maybe the gamer culture. I don't know.
Well, and you're really opening yourself up when you're doing role playing versus other things. You go out to a baseball game with someone, you're not sharing things that you wouldn't do in public.
Yeah, and you're not at your house.
You're not speaking in voice. You know. There are the sports fans that'll do the paint themselves up and all of that. But
I speak in a goblin voice in my Cardinals games.
I love that.
Well, I think here's something else. Let's say for a moment that we had a baseball team. If I go up to bat and
I'm the pitcher. I'm not the catcher.
Thank you, Pat.
Yes, you're welcome.
If I consistently can't hit the ball, I can't catch the ball, I can't throw the ball, there's a lot of very objective.
You become the first base coach.
There's a lot of objective, quantifiable things that you can say about the situation. Role-playing games aren't that clear-cut. How do you tell someone you're being disruptive? Now, you can say they're being disruptive, but where this inevitably ends up is you don't debate the forest, you debate the trees. Because the person will say, well, how am I being disruptive? And even if there's 1,000 examples, well, you now have to give one. And so they debate that example. So maybe throw out a second. So they debate that example.
And then you're defending someone else at the group because they're like, oh, well, I do that, but Pat does this.
Yeah, or I didn't like it, neither did so-and-so, and now you've drugged somebody else into it, and it just becomes a huge mess. And so I think what happens is the person cannot say, my role-playing style is not meshing with the group. This might be a rejection of me as an individual, or it might not be. It could just be, you know, these people love me, they want to do other things with me, but I just don't mesh as a role-player with this group, and therefore the problem is my role-playing, because you don't have that same sort of quantifiable, observable data like you would have with a sports game, whether we're talking about football, baseball, basketball, whatever. Instead, it's you sit down and pretend to be a character. And it's not like you can say, oh, gee, well, you failed to do this, this, and this. And I mean, if it's obvious behavior, sure. But if it's more subtle nuance, if it's just they're always kind of pushing the boundaries a little bit and doing things that don't quite fit in with what the rest of the group wants, it's always defensible because it's never so black and white as you kick the ball at goal and you didn't hit. It's not that black and white.
Well, and I've also noticed a lot of times, even if you like to hang out with people with such limited social time, occasionally there are people in your life that you may only see at gaming. So if you say, I don't want to game with you,
yeah,
you really are cutting them out of your life. I mean, I can think of people that we've gamed with that we don't now that I miss. Yeah. I miss hanging out with. I miss going to dinner with and having conversations with. But the only opportunity I had to spend time with them based on just time constraints was gaming. It was like you're cutting them out of your life by saying, I don't want to game with you right now.
So, John, out of curiosity, have you, in doing this, ever had anyone really lose their mind at you or just react very, very poorly? They terminated the friendship. They started screaming and yelling at you. There was some outcome to this that went beyond they stopped showing up at the game.
No, I've definitely seen that happen before in groups I've been in, not groups I've put together. But I'm so sneaky and underhanded about it that I avoid the whole thing.
You know, and that's what I hate is... there are always little sneaky ways of fixing the problem, you know, where you find another day to play on that you know that person's not free, or you ask them to step out of the campaign, wait until they forget about it, and then roll on without them. If you sit down and really put your brain to these machinations, but I just feel so damn dirty doing that. I mean, to me, honesty and straightforwardness is such a big thing that it's like I'd almost rather put up with the person that's being a problem than cheat around the
Not me.
I get that, you know, and I'm not here to judge anyone but myself, but it's just...
I just said a moment ago that you've wasted large swaths of your life being too scared to extricate yourself from situations or kick people out of them. I think you just need to nut up a little bit, man, and stand up for your free time.
That's where I'm at, though. So I think what I need to learn to do is to nut up about my free time, not to find these little...
instead of digging a tunnel out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Push straight through the barricade. And it's not always going to be pretty. But at the end of the day, I know it was in my heart. That person either will accept it or they won't. I can't control that. And it's my own conscience I have to live with. And at least I can say, you know, I had the respect to be straight with the person. I didn't have to just hedge my way around them. And I don't know. All right. So let's talk about our other subject. I have to be careful how I title this show because how Wayne described this is accurate, but at a glance is misleading because he wants to talk about skeleton characters. And it's funny because I actually have had an idea for a semi-self-aware undead skeleton, if you will, that I've wanted to play in a D&D game for a while, but that's not the type of skeleton character we're talking about.
Well, I had like 2 pages of notes prepared for that very thing.
Yeah, I can imagine you did.
And I mean, I was going to go on and on about my skeleton character idea.
It was just going to be Mist Form.
Yeah, it was.
Well, it actually, it's great to have Pat here for this topic because
holy
Pat is what inspired me to think of this.
Awesome.
And
I do inspire.
There are some players out there that will create
most of the time.
But. There are some players out there that will create pages of backstory, know everything about their character going into the first game, and be ready to go.
And but then there's me.
Yeah, and I tend to fall more on the same line that Pat does of there are players that just don't know the voice of their character until they've played it.
Yep. Or don't like making characters. And I think this is going to be foreign to a lot of people because there are many people, myself included, that enjoy making characters. In fact, there are a lot of people where when they've got their very first role-playing game, sat there and just made characters they were never going to play just because they enjoyed the exercise. Oh, my God.
I like making characters.
My too. Biggest...
That's like edging. It's like, why would you do it if you're not going to get the outcome?
Well, see, I mean, come on. But that's what I'm saying is I think... I think Pat's specific issue here, he's not going to be alone, but I don't think he's going to be representative here of a plurality, because my bigger frustration is when I make a great character and then because either the campaign got cut short or the GM screws me, I don't get to play it. But anyways, continue on.
Well, and I often find when I'm playing, especially a new system more than anything else or a new setting, I'll make the character. I'll have all this going in my head that I want to have come out. And then when the game starts, I'll realize none of this really fits for this system.
Yeah.
And this just isn't working. So I kind of came up with this idea, and I know some systems have it built in. Like Fate has a character creation on the fly. And the idea is making a skeleton character, only putting down what you absolutely need to have for the beginning of the first session, and then filling everything else out as you play along.
There's various reasons to do this. You're new to the system, and you might find out the hard way that the way you built your character is worthless. Is worthless in the system, is worthless to the game that the game master's running. Your character doesn't fit into the group.
Yeah.
Your character works wonderfully, but you just don't enjoy playing it. It's not a mechanic, qualitative or quantitatively speaking, that you enjoy. You're like Pat. You don't want to invest yourself in a character until you know you're going to keep it. Yeah. Maybe it's like Wayne, where you need to feel out the voice. You don't get the character until the first time he or she speaks. And then all of a sudden, you start making stuff up and realizing, oh, this is where I'm from, and this is what I did, and all that kind of stuff.
If we go back to Sir William the Bard, I envisioned him as being a barroom brawler. And then I started playing and realized, I can't do that with my stats.
No.
And that is the kind of thing where if I would have realized that going in, it's like, oh, I wanted to be a barroom brawler. I realized that first session. Okay, I'm going to take some skills that help with that.
Right.
Or I'm going to take a feat that helps with that. And I think this is a lot easier to do in like a point buy system than it would be a class. If it's a class-based system, you're already limited in your role. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to play a first level fighter. I'm going to throw on some stats. But if it's a point buy system, you just don't buy things.
I think there are ways you can hedge this in most games, and certainly not all. We talked about Fate. In Fate, quite frankly, as long as you can write down that core concept, you know, you can put down that here's my, what is it, what's that primary aspect called?
Core concept, I think.
Core concept, okay, I think I had it right, okay. Because I couldn't remember off the top of my head what it was called. But you can work forward from that. You can say, okay, I'm a failed wizard. And that's all you have to say. And then as things go along and it's like, oh, you know, actually kind of makes sense. This guy would really be into fire. So now you put down that it's got a thing for fire, you know, whatever. And you can keep fleshing that out as you go.
And the system has that as a rule set. Yeah. So if you want to bring someone into the game without going spending a whole session doing character creation, then when it's time to use an aspect, like you're in the middle of a situation, and you're like, oh, well, my character's backstory said that they're good with fire. So it would make sense that I would have an aspect that is fire related.
Right.
You just write that aspect down then. You're locked in once you write it down, but up until then, you're free to add those in.
Let's take another game system. I've dealt with a lot of people who rectally unload kittens when I bring this up, but within D&D, at least within several of the editions, there were extant, and in many cases, core rules available for creating a classless character. For creating a character who is a level zero human elf, whatever. And then as you play that character, you can say, you know what? I think I'm going to go over to the church and become an acolyte. Or I'm going to go over to the wizard and see if he'll teach me some stuff. And yeah, maybe you have to advance the clock a little bit. Or maybe the game master deals that training in game. And you go from being a zero level humanoid into being a first level classed character. And when you make that transition, that's where you pick up your class abilities. That's where you pick up the bulk of your skill points, or in the case of second edition, your proficiencies. And you don't even define that until that point. All you define is I'm a guy who lives in the castle and I'm so-and-so's brother. And that's all you've defined. What you're going to do with your life is up in the air. And I've run games very successfully like that, where I started everyone as a zero level character. And I mean, Chad says there's no such thing as first level games, and I disagree with him because I've run zero level games. And I know there are some games out there that are still geared towards this. Dungeon Crawl Classics is one where you start off as zero level and play whoever survives.
Well, and one of the reasons I wanted to hit on the topic is because we always talk about the group template and we always talk about well fleshed out characters, and that's just not how some people play. I think I would have a problem as a GM doing this for everyone. Like having everyone at the table have a complete skeleton character that hasn't built up their backstory at all and doesn't have their mechanic, because I don't even know how I would prepare the first session.
Yeah, because you don't know what motivates them. You don't know if they're going to be coherent. You don't know if they're going to immediately take to infighting or not. You have no idea what this group is going to do.
I think that's a good challenge, though, for a GM, because coming to that first session somewhat cold like that, not having like this well-fleshed-out thing with a bunch of character hooks in there because you don't have them, that first session or two is just sort of the start of the game to allow characters to sort of be formulated and get up to speed. And then after that, assuming things work out well, hopefully they will, then you'll, at that point, a couple sessions in, you will start to get like the character hooks and the things that motivate the characters.
From a plot writing standpoint, I can see where you're coming from. This is not what you said, so I want to stress this is not a rebuttal to you, but more to where some people might take that. Mm-hmm. It is not the Game Master's job to build group cohesion.
Right.
And this is one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of the group template. It's because of the fact that I got tired of everybody just creates whatever jackass, and it's my job to somehow keep them together. And if everyone's playing a skeleton character, okay, fair point. That could be an interesting exercise and improv GMing, and maybe out of that improv comes some surprises that not only shape your campaign but help shape the players or the characters. But I think it is still incumbent upon the players to be building their characters in such a way that they are going to form a cogent and meaningful group. They're not going to just be six mismatched wild cards running in opposite directions.
I will counter that just in the fact that we have had examples in our own groups where we have used the group template, and we've talked about it before we even start the first session, where we all know each other, and this is how we all know each other, and this is a group that's all together, and then we start playing, and we have loner outsider characters or characters that just don't get along. Even though you try, you've done it that way. Yeah. So you're going to have it either way. I mean, I would think, hopefully you've got a group of people that, they want to play and they want to get along together. So everyone starting with a stealth character would be okay, because the expectation is I'm not going to be an and I'm going to basically create a character that's going to pretty much get along with people, right. Even though I haven't done it all. I don't have copious notes and volumes of in reefs of paper that say this is what it is. I'll do it, at the table.
If I were going to pitch it, I would probably pitch it as, okay, we're going to do skeleton characters this round, but we're going to define one aspect of the character before we even start, and that's how does your character fit in with the other characters?
Yeah.
Everything else can be skeleton, but I want connections.
Yeah,
I can get that. And like for me, it's like I don't go completely. I'm not bare bones skeleton when I do mine, but I like to leave a fair amount of things to be fleshed out in the first several sessions.
I like my personality quirks to come in pretty quickly in the game based on how I've rolled, which is going to be poorly. But what if I failed on two or three times? Okay, that's now part of my personality.
Sure, yeah.
And I like having things like that flesh out the character, and you can't do that before you play.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know how you could establish relationships when none of you knew anything about your characters, but I've actually done that before, so I do know how you can. Sometimes the first step is you two are sisters, or I'm married to you and you're my father-in-law. And it can just sort of unfold from there. I've done both of those recently.
Yeah, I love to be able to establish those connections through the gaming, through the story, as we're playing. To me, those are usually more meaningful connections than the, okay, I'm starting this character and Wayne is he's my uncle. Or, we grew up and we were best friends growing up in the city together. Okay, but, to me, it's more, I like it when it comes through the playing. Like, Gnarl is a good example because now we set things up beforehand, but we developed more of our relationship through the play of the campaign, I think, than we did just from what we had set up. I mean, we had a good idea for what we had set up, but it took on a life of its own.
Yeah.
And in a way that I never would have expected just from the way we had it set up.
Yeah, that campaign changed so much from the first session or two to what it became.
Pat, backing up a little bit, were you talking about the loose cannons with the group template? I think I'd have to cut that one both ways, because on the one hand, there are some people that violate the group template. They agree to one thing, but then what they create is something else. But I will say, on the other hand, that I think it is sometimes hard at the group template level, especially for the people that don't really get their character until they've played it, to say, yeah, well, of course I'd fit in this way. But then once they actually start playing, they start to realize, or someone else starts to realize, wow, this relationship really doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. There's no way this would have happened. I'm not feeling it. It doesn't,
right.
You know, I just can't see it having happened. And so the group template, it could theoretically hem you into something you're going to regret or have to alter anyway,
yeah,
by fully fleshing out the character. I think the two biggest hurdles for this in my mind is, on the one hand, having enough developed to create a cogent group and to make sure the group grows in a cogent direction. Mm-hmm. And then also to make sure you've got it figured out in the rules. There are some games, once again, like Fate or Zero Level Characters in D&D, where that works pretty well. There are other games I can think of, like Battletech or Star Trek, where unless you do skips in the campaign of here we are as kids, here we are as teenagers, here we are now outside of the academy, you really can't get that same sense of things. Like, mm-hmm. Fast as Star Trek, it gives you some clean breaks where you could do that if you wanted to. You could roll your childhood skills, which is part of the game development, yeah, and then play those guys as kids on a particular planet and see how things shake out, and then go through the academy and figure that out. But there are other games, like, let's take, I don't know, I mean, Savage Worlds. Yeah, you could do it. I mean, I guess you could wait to pick a lot of your perks and flaws and such until you're partway through the game. But there are other things that you do kind of have to lock down up front, where I'm not saying it can't be done, but I think with some systems, this is going to take more contemplation than others. Some will lend themselves to it a lot more easily, yeah, than others.
Yeah, for something like Battletech, I think you could do some of it with your actual mech warrior himself or herself, but there's not really a lot on that sheet to begin with.
No.
And you definitely couldn't do it with the mech.
No, well, and that may be a presupposition as well, as if you say, well, we're going to do with Battletech, okay, your secondary skills, your personality, these are things we're going to flesh out, but the base presumption that you are a mech warrior, somewhere on your sheet you're going to have mech piloting, mech gunnery, and you own or lease or borrowed or whatever a battle mech, this is just a presuppositional given. Whereas opposed to if you say something like, well, we're going to do combined arms, so maybe it's not a given you're a mech warrior. You might be a technician. You might be a vehicle pilot. You might be an aerospace pilot. You might be an infantryman. There's all kinds of other things that you might turn out as. And I think that's another way you can kind of meet halfway, is say, well, I'm only going to ask you to develop these things and everything else will then be negotiable. But you do have to at least fill out half the character sheets, for example, instead of just the header.
Yeah, I think there's some real potential in it for certain types of players. And it's, like I said, it just seems to go against the group template, but I don't think it necessarily does, especially if you only have one or two people doing it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up. I'm looking forward, certainly, to our little rumpus this Friday, and hopefully we'll get some good recordings out of that.
Oh, yes.
And as for you guys at home, as always, have a great week and great games. And we will catch you folks next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.